This is Bill Powers with MiningStockEducation.com, and today's discussion centers around understanding the process of mineral discovery. One of the most exciting things as a natural resource investor is investing in an exploration company that makes a significant mineral discovery. You can see that position multiply 20, 50, even 100 times or more, and it's quite exciting and quite rewarding for the natural resource investor. But before you can successfully invest in an exploration company, you first, of course, have to understand the exploration process. So I've asked someone more than qualified to explain this process to us. On the line with me is James Sykes, the Vice President of Exploration and Development for Appia Energy Corporation, a uranium explorer in the Athabasca Basin in northern Saskatchewan. Over the past decade, James has been directly and indirectly involved with the discovery of over 350 million pounds of uranium in the Athabasca Basin. Most notably, James played a key role in NexGen's Arrow discovery. James, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's my pleasure to be here.
James, could you begin by giving listeners an overview of how you became an exploration geologist and the significant discoveries that you have been involved with thus far?
I guess I kind of lucked into getting into exploration. You know, going through university, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to do biochemistry, but found out very quickly that I didn't like that. So I started floating around and discovered geology actually through university. And it just really strung a good chord with me. So I picked away at it. And then when I decided to go back to school, for a little bit more a dedicated type of education, I decided to go back for geology. And yeah, it just really sank in with me. So like I said, I started working then right away with Denison Mines in 2006 up in the Athabasca Basin. And with my background being from Elliott Lake, uranium was just natural for me. And reading a lot about Athabasca high grade, it seemed like a very interesting type of geological situation with the structures and the fluid plays. So I guess working through with Denison, you know, those the stomping grounds, learned a lot from working with the guys and just seeing some of the core and like spending all my days out in the core racks. And you know, every waking minute, I was looking at as much core as possible and learning what makes things tick and, you know, how does this core differ from that core and why are you seeing alteration patterns here and not there? And this just really trying to put the whole puzzle back together. And then, again, through other companies, Forum, learning from those masters of exploration there, and Rough Rider being involved with the Rough Rider, or Pathor being involved with the Rough Rider discoveries. That was probably one of the best experiences I could have ever asked for. A great bunch of guys to work with, great deposits, and just actually working with uranium in its true form. And again, seeing those alterations and structures, it was definitely an eye-opener.
What was your role in the Arrow discovery? Can you describe that?
Yeah, for Arrow, basically I was the chief geologist there, the chief exploration geologist, and you know, just coming up with the ideas to, my team and I were coming up with the ideas where we should drill and what looks like the best targets. And for us, it was always what we called Area C. It met a lot of criteria that I've drilled in the past on other projects where you just have anomalies associated with your EM conductors. And you know, we never did hit big deposits in the past, but we were consistently hitting uraniferous higher levels of uranium compared to background. So it just seemed like a great area to go to, and lo and behold, it sure turned into a bonanza.
Mm-hmm. And now you're with Appia as the Vice President of Exploration and Development. Could you give us an overview of some generals of the exploration process and then begin to take us through the discovery process?
Yeah, sure. Well, like for myself, I guess exploration, there's a lot of romanticism to it. It's something that really drives you to make the discoveries, just thinking about, you know, can you make a discovery? And it's kind of like when you picture back in the day, people searching for ancient Aztec ruins or treasures of gold. You know, this is the exact same thing. It's that romanticism really drives you. So, but for exploration, though, it's a combination of different scientific techniques that really transform it into an art form. And that whole process itself, it's a world of creativity, and you need people to be able to see different elements of it all. With that saying, that one person is not going to see everything exactly the same as somebody else, which makes exploration a little bit trickier, because you can't say one person is right and one person is wrong all the time. Somebody's ideas may be more valid in one area, another person's ideas might be valid in another, and that's just simply exploration. So again, the thing with exploration too is you also need to be geared to the commodity and the area that you're interested in. So I wouldn't go and use diamond exploration techniques to look for uranium, and I don't think diamond guys would use uranium techniques to look for diamonds. To go steps further, like if you're looking for something that's buried deep, well, then you don't look at surface techniques to do that. So the process of discovery varies across the commodities and regions, companies, and even the people. There's no single identifiable process for making a discovery. It's really up to the person, up to the artist to do all of this. So what a geologist really has to do is they have to become very familiar with the commodity they're exploring for. You know, what are the host rocks? What are the source rocks? You know, are these structured controlled deposits? Are there definable alteration patterns that you can see along the trend that can help you vector in? How can you recognize these without actually drilling or stepping on the ground? Because that's probably one of the big first steps you need to do, is define an area without stepping on the ground. So that's where you start to rely on geophysical surveys, and you know, that interpretation right there, it's an art form, it's a piece of art. And then once you start doing that, you know, you can build up your models, and so it becomes a model-driven approach, which is, again, it's fine, but some people, they can get really, really stuck in a way and just have horse blinders on, which you don't see the whole picture. You may not see certain little elements that can help attribute to actually helping you make a discovery. So the models, they need to be adaptable, and they should even have end members, but always open for outside the box possibilities. The Earth system itself is just, it's always a bag of tricks.
So if a company starts with an operating thesis for an exploration project, and then the geophysical surveys and other tests come back negative and not in agreement with that thesis, is that the time to possibly think out of the box, or maybe go back to the drawing board?
I'd say both. No, it really doesn't cost much money to think. So as many ideas as you can come up with, I think that's always good. Again, if you drill an area and it's not looking favorable, you can always look at the geochemistry behind things. That, for me, tells a lot of stories. You can always see if you're kind of on a trend, a notable trend or not. To always just abandon an area, you know, there's no issues with that, because you could always go off to another area, make a discovery, and maybe you're seeing things in that area that actually look similar to the other area that you just abandoned, and you can always learn from both.
From the investor's perspective, when the investor hears of the beginning thesis or concept for an exploration project and those first results, geophysical surveys, magnetic tests, gravity tests come back and they're not in agreement with that initial thesis, from the investor's perspective, and that maybe raises a red flag for them, what would you say to the average retail investor that might be concerned at that point?
Oh, wow. It's an interesting question. Yeah, to be honest, you'd always try to play it up and make it look as best as possible. You're always in this game hoping to make a discovery. I don't think there's anybody out there who's just in this just to be in it, you know, not actually looking for a discovery. So if your geophysical elements aren't aligning, then I guess you could be looking at maybe one of the surveys might even be off. You know, it could have been bad data. So you'd have to look into that. But you'd always want to come out with a positive sign, and I think that's pretty well actually easy to do in a lot of commodities across the board.
So you're an Athabasca Basin uranium geologist. Could you talk through your process of discovery a little more for us?
Yeah, sure, certainly. That's a little bit more of my definitely my stomping grounds, so it's a little bit easier to talk about. Well, with Athabasca high grade, they're all controlled by structures, and in that regards, it does kind of make life a little bit easier because that's primarily what you're looking for. You're looking for fault zones. You're looking for these major structures. And so when I get into exploring for different areas, I start looking at the big picture. You know, do I see these structures? How can I see them? So what structures actually matter even? And that's where going back to known deposits and learning what those controlling structures are, what those alteration patterns are. You know, can you see those in the geophysics? Basically, it's just researching what's already out there, what's already known, and then applying that to, the far field. So with Athabasca, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked. Well, what are the host rocks? What controls uranium? What are the sources? What type of structures do you need? What type of alterations do you need to have? How do you find all of these? Well, that's where you definitely go back to the geophysics of the whole area. And again, you're looking at structure, so you have to look at the region as a whole, and you're looking for gross scale structural patterns. Myself, I seem to have more of a mathematical approach, and that I'm looking for fractals. And if nobody knows what fractals are, they're self-repeating patterns at all scales. The universe seems to work on these type of systems, so it makes sense that they would work in the geological world. So when you see a structural pattern at a very large scale, then it's time to look into, and you're looking for that same type of structure, which will exist in there. And to get to those, I seem to be a very simplistic exploration guy. I don't like to spend a lot of money on things that I don't think work. So what I primarily focus on is EM surveys. And for that, I'm looking for graphitic host rocks, which are also your major structural controls. Gravity surveys are key for helping discover alteration patterns and also structural corridors. Resistivity, especially in the sandstone, it's a remarkable tool in the sandstone, and it pretty well acts the same way as EM as well in the basement. And so you're mapping out your major basement structure zones, but you're also looking for alteration within that sandstone. Magnetics, you can use those for kind of getting a baseline lithologies or just terrains even, and then seeing structures within there, any major primary structures or any cross-cutting structures show up nicely. And if you're looking for surface features, then again with uranium, it's a no-brainer to go with a radiometric survey. Just looking at that PLS boulder field, and even some of the first uranium deposits that were discovered, they're all discovered through radiometrics just because everything was right at surface.
Drill programs are expensive, of course, so you use all of these technologies to then pinpoint where you believe it will be the highest probability of striking a mineral deposit.
Exactly, yes. Yep.
And can you
is a long shot.
It's still a long shot at that point, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Again, there's numbers I hear quoted that are 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 of prospects turn into economic projects. So one drill hole, it's an extreme long shot. Still better odds of making a discovery than winning the lottery, but it's a long shot for sure.
Could you discuss what you're currently doing with Appia Energy on your current project? What is the thesis there, and at what stage are you at in the exploration project?
Yeah, certainly. So for Loringer, that's our main project that we have for Appia that we just finished a drill program for back in April. And we want to keep exploring there. What we've already done was We flew the property with EM magnetics, and we followed up with gravity again, just touching on the my base exploration tools. And for me, that's very important as well, especially because they're very cost effective, they're quick and easy to do, and I know from my own experience that they work, and they work very well. So that's kind of what I'll stick to, and that goes actually a lot further with the company, because you're not diluting your funds as much, and which is, you know, great for shareholders. The quicker you can come to a discovery, the better. And really, in today's world, now that a lot of these surface deposits have been discovered, you're looking for things that are a little bit deeper, and you're not going to find these things unless you drill. So you have to get to a drill-ready state as quick as possible, but you also want to make sure that you are targeting the right areas. So what we've done with Loringer, again, was we've flown with EM, and we've looked at the strongest conductors. Well, we've looked at all the conductors and just basically looking for where are we seeing flexures or little bends along them, really subtle features even, and losses of signals or expansion of signals, and just right, that's a first pass right there. You couple that in with magnetics, you know, does it look like it's on a good potential fault corridor? Are there cross-cutting structures coming through there? And so now you've got a two-layer program or a two-layer scenario, and then you throw gravity on top of that. And again, gravity picking up, what it's really doing is just measuring the low-density materials that are underneath the area where the survey is. And all of these Athabasca uranium deposits are associated with clay alteration halos, structural corridors. Both of those are low density situations, so you're looking for those gravity lows. And if you see these cross-cutting structures, you see these EM, these little EM anomalies or blips, and all associated with gravity lows, then that's the best place to go to. It's a three-layer approach to defining your best drill targets. So we're at that stage with Loringer, with Appia. We've defined a number of targets, but again, we've ranked them internally. Some look much better than others. Some are on larger trends, so that could be very meaningful. Could be a larger structure is in play. We wanted to test some of these in our drill program that we just finished, but we couldn't obviously get to everything. It was, you know, we're limited to time and to budget constraints. So we went to a couple areas that logistically was much more feasible for us. Again, really trying to reduce those drill costs and trying to make a quick discovery. What we did learn from those areas, though, was absolutely fantastic. I think that they've really opened up the whole property as a whole, not just the property, but just the whole region of where we are, that you can get these significant alteration patterns. You can get these massive structures that you really need to host uranium deposits. So we're very happy with what we've seen from the drill core results. Now it's just a matter of getting some of the lab assays back, so we can start piecing a little bit more together and figuring out what we're seeing. But moving ahead, we are looking at drilling some more of our favorable targets that we did not get to in the winter program, so we're hoping that we'll see a lot more joy coming up in the near future.
James, is there any concluding thoughts you'd like to share with listeners regarding the discovery process, investing, or Appia Energy?
I think the key, again, is to, for an investor especially, is to look at the people with successes. You know, they're not looking into it. These are the people who are committed to it and who have that artistic approach, who can see things and make a lot of sense of things. So I think people are the key to a successful company. And, you know, with the odds against them, you can't make a discovery on every drill hole. You may not even be able to make a discovery on every single project. But the people with the past successes, I think, are the ones who can keep doing it over and over and over. So for an investor standpoint, I think those are the people that you wanna follow. For Appia, again, focusing solely on Loringer. We've got some wonderful targets, targets that get me absolutely excited, and I kind of wish I was out there with a pickaxe and shovel right now trying to dig down and see what's down there myself. But it's a patient game, so we'll be patient and wait till we can actually start drilling ourselves.
James, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's been my pleasure. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.